Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
At least it's not bases loaded. It's just a man on second. Maybe we can get him in.
Roman drives one. High and deep and gone. Roman reigns supreme in Gotham.
Lean back.
A ground ball to short. Story's got it. He throws to first in time. Ball game over. And the Red Sox win game one. Full on. Balls on the table.
Acknowledge me.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
If you want to know why Lou Maloney is the best baseball analyst in the city of Boston, that little clip right there tells you why. Within seconds, you went from snarky cynicism to just unbridled joy and excitement about what was going on. And that's what we are. I mean, you guys make fun of me from flip-flopping day to day.
Yeah.
Which you may get a little bit of today.
Oh, really?
Well, kind of.
Related to the Red Sox, the Patriots, or both?
A little bit of Red Sox flippity-flopping.
Okay, gotcha.
Here. But Lou Maloney just did it in mere seconds. Ah, good thing the bases aren't loaded. Maybe they'll actually score. Oh, my God! He starts laughing and enjoying it. Like, and I think, you know what Lou and Andy Hart have in common?
What?
We're short. Not what I was going with. We grew up in New England. That's what New Englanders are. You know how they say, like,
wait a second, the weather will change, blah, blah, blah.
Also, our emotions and our vibes will change just like that. Because we were used to getting kicked in the nuts for so long in the sports world. We were cynical. Now we're positive because we went through this weird dynasty run era, all these titles. And so we're sort of like, we still have both of those in us.
Yeah.
The riding high and also the, oh no, this is never going to work out. And they collide, and that's why we're so damn weird.
Because you grew up in it. You were born in it,
yes.
as Bane would say.
Like, absolutely.
You still have that, well, something could still go wrong even 100%. After, you know, four Red Sox championships and whatever it was since the year 2000. It's
yep.
That's just, it's ingrained, it's genetic at this point.
And with the Red Sox and the Patriots to some degree in recent years, it's been rekindled, the negativity, because the football team kind of stinks in recent years.
Right.
And the baseball team has kind of stunk in recent years. And
right.
They've teased us in different ways and screwed with us in different ways, especially the Red Sox. Every year they're not too bad. They don't do anything the trade deadline, then they fade, then they're in last place, and it's like the same, except now it ain't the same. Now they go to New York in a must-win game. Was that a must-win game last night?
You want to call it sneaky big or must-win?
More than sneaky big.
I don't think...
But not really a must-win.
Yeah.
So whatever the mid-ground of those two things is what happened last night. Red Sox win 6-3 at Yankee Stadium. They get the job done. The Roman Empire conquered Yankee Stadium, conquered New York.
Keeps checking all the boxes. I heard that on the broadcast. I loved it. Checks every single box in front of him as a professional.
And I continue to say it, and I continue to know it's dumb when you make these anointments of he's special, he's it, he's him, which, by the way, I think was actually one of the ads during the game, that weird him movie about the football player that is also the serial killer.
Oh, yeah.
Steroid
when is
users.
That coming out?
Not soon enough.
Yeah.
September. Yeah, within the month. September.
Yeah.
Are you still not going to go see it, by the
show
way?
Show trip.
I might, but it makes me uncomfortable. The whole damn thing makes me uncomfortable.
Why?
It's weird.
Why? It's not like you have a son playing college football this year or anything like that.
Well, I'm thinking about needles and drugs and head injuries.
It's definitely going to be like a body horror movie where, like, you're going to see some crazy things happen to the body. That's my guess.
Yeah.
And I'm also thinking it's so crazy that at some point it won't bother me. Because I'm just like, this is a film. This
right,
is not,
right.
There's no connection to reality in this footage. So, but the Red Sox, they get the job done. Roman Anthony with a bomb at Yankee Stadium.
Awesome.
Which would be called a flyout at Fenway Park, but we don't need to talk about that. This was one of those 28 ballpark home runs.
28. Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City and then Fenway Park in Boston. Apparently it wouldn't have gone out, which I still don't believe because that was a nuke.
Wait, what do you mean you don't? Wait, sorry. Mr. Analytics doesn't believe the analytics?
Yeah, but let me be a fan for 0.5 seconds before I go back into Mr. Analytics. That was a bomb. He leaned back. Didn't you hear Lou Maloney talking about lean back?
But
that Joe.
You know how
measurements and distances.
I don't care.
Ballparks work.
I don't care. That was a home. That was a no doubter in all 30 ballparks in my brain.
I'm all for poo-pooing stats and analytics and websites. So this is one that I actually think is kind of common sense. They know the distances. They know the angles and all that. They know how far the ball went. It wasn't a home run.
I disagree. They're not always right.
Warning track power at Fenway, but it's game-winning power, concluding power.
Clinching.
That was the word I was saying. I was concluding, clinching.
Yeah, either way.
At Yankee Stadium.
He's the best.
And he is. And, you know, this is where I'm going to take the victory lap before 3 o'clock when Ted gets here. And by the way, Dan Ball filling in for Nick Fitzy Stevens today, bumping up to the big chair.
What's up?
But I'm going to say it again. I believe this team will go as far as the young guys take it. I really do believe, like, Roman Anthony was special last night. That's a moment. That is where national TV game, it was on Fox, you come up in the clutch late against the Yankee. Like, that is how he's a superstar in Boston right now. That's how you take that next step to becoming a national MLB superstar, doing things like that
right
on that stage.
Face of the league versus face of the franchise.
And, oh, by the way, you needed it. Because a 4-3 game, how you feeling?
Not great.
Especially in that ballpark.
based on the struggles of everybody not named Whitlock or Chapman, not great, as Alex Cora would say.
But I will say, they managed to win that game. Alex Cora managed the bullpen to win that game. They used 6 pitchers. Giolito was not great. Not great, as you like to say. 3 walks, 3 earned runs. Just a meh performance, I would say. And then the bullpen did its job. I look and I see the R column. I like when the R column, you go 0-0-0-0-0. That being said, if that stays a 4-3 game, I'm nervous.
Yeah, of course.
Anxiety, that would be in me.
Now, Chapman's only given up, what was it, 1 earned run since the end of May or something ridiculous like that? Maybe it was 2?
Still, though, this is where that divide between cynical New Englander and, like, homer supportive, we are always going to win New Englander, the back and forth. 4-3 there, I'm wondering, is Chapman due to blow one in Yankee Stadium?
It's a fair question.
Thing.
Yeah.
And then you get the little extra insurance from Roman Anthony, and you get the moment because you also get a bat flip, which I love.
Woo.
I know I used to be a little bit more old school. There was a time maybe like 5 years ago, Batista maybe. I thought he was a little over the top in Toronto with some of his bat flips.
That go-ahead home run in the playoffs, yeah.
Guess what?
The wild card series.
I'm now all in on bat flips.
That was one of the coolest bat flips I've ever seen.
And you earned it. This is where I go back to. Remember when Bill Belichick was running up the score in 2007 and he was like, oh, maybe stop him was kind of the answer from New Englanders?
Yeah.
You don't want a bat flip? Don't give up a 380-foot home run with the game on the line kind of thing.
And it wasn't an exaggerated bat flip either. No. It was just a quick little I've been here before toss. It was clean. It was cool.
And that's where I would say, and we'll hear some audio later from our guy St. Bregman talking about Roman Anthony just basically does everything perfectly.
Yeah.
I agree with you. That was not an over-the-top bat flip. That was the bat flip of a guy who's going down the road of Ted Williams.
Right.
Who's a on-base machine who, you know, is beyond his 21 years and his approach and everything he does. That was the perfect bat flip for the moment.
Who didn't do something crazy in his mind or out of character. He went up there and did his job. He did exactly what he was supposed to do in that moment, and it was just kind of get this away from me kind of bat flip.
The old school, a lot of older football coaches about touchdown celebrations, act like you've been there before and you'll be there again when you score a touchdown.
Yeah.
Don't act like it's, oh my God, this is the only time I'm ever going to score a touchdown, so I'm going to do whatever goes through my mind. That's how Roman Anthony. You're right. It was my first home run at Yankee Stadium. It won't be my last home run at Yankee Stadium, and it certainly won't. Not with that porch.
With a little hint to shut the bleep up, Yankees fans, which is just my favorite thing that a Red Sox athlete can do.
And I love it, and it starts off a critical 4-game series on the right foot. And the only thing I will say is I told you this pregame yesterday. You can attest to this.
Mm-hmm.
I said this series feels like one to me where they go out tonight and they get the job done. The Yankees don't hit the ball out of the ballpark 5, 6, 7, 9 times. The Red Sox win, and then we get ahead of ourselves because we're like, whoa, you won with Giolito. You still got Crochet coming. Wow, we've already got a split of the series at the very least. And then something bad happens. That's where I go back to the cynical Andy that grew up in the old days when Roger Clemens and the Red Sox were one strike away and still didn't win the World Series in 1986. But this was a huge, huge momentum win for the Boston Red Sox to end the way they'd been playing. And you know what the best part is?
What?
They still didn't hit with runners in scoring position, really.
No, no, which makes the Roman Anthony home run all the more important.
Huge.
Because I don't know what it is about, and Lou said it sarcastically. That was the first thing that we played on the show, was him joking about how bad the Red Sox have been with the bases loaded. Duran was hitting 111 with the bases loaded coming into the game, and I think that dropped. I don't know what it is. It's the reverting back to what we complained about so much as an offense, which is the absence of just putting the ball in play.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they go back to being the April and May Red Sox, where strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. Oh, now we just lost our chance to score. And that's the one thing that kind of worries me and makes me wonder if your prediction for the series is going to be right, because you got Giolito out of there after 4 2/3 innings, and then you had to use all of your high-leverage arms. So those guys should be available tonight, but at some point you're going to have to give all five of those guys a breather, right, either today or tomorrow, and it's going to be a series that's decided by a run here or there, you'd have to imagine. So you just put yourself into another situation where you have to use Whitlock, have to use Chapman, and at some point those guys are going to need a breather.
Now, the flip side of that is you'd like to think with Bayo and Crochet going, your best pitchers, you're going to get more innings. You're going to get better performances. Maybe you can lean on one of those guys to go 8 innings, 9 innings, whatever it may be.
Right.
You're not asking if it were, you know, May and Giolito on the horizon, or Buehler and May on the horizon, you're like, oh, we're screwed. We already used the bullpen and we're going to have to use it again.
Right.
You can talk yourself into Bayo and Crochet giving you, what, a combined 15 innings over two games? Like, that's not that hard to envision, even against the Yankees. The bigger question I wanted to ask you, because you brought this up in the back room when we were talking about this, and if you want to join the conversation, 617-779-7937. We're taking a little victory lap for Roman Anthony and the Boston Red Sox. Big win, 6-3 in Yankee Stadium. Take the first game of a 4-game series. But Dan Ball, you're not sold on the New York Yankees. You don't necessarily believe they are a great baseball team, even though I'm quickly looking up my favorite column in the standings. They have a 96.7% chance to make the playoffs.
Yes.
So they're a full-fledged playoff team, essentially, as much as you can be on August 22nd.
Yeah, and they're going to be a playoff team.
They rebuilt their bullpen, and yet yesterday their bullpen gave up 4 runs to the Boston Red Sox.
Right.
It was fun to watch another bullpen give up runs and not have it be your bullpen. If you keep the ball in the ballpark against them, I feel like your chances of winning go up exponentially.
And that's the New York Yankees in a nutshell. It's either a power barrage or a power outage, and it's sloppy play. It's errors, it's walks, it's just dumb decisions. It's kind of like the Red Sox are looking in the mirror from a defense and base running perspective. It was the 18th time the Yankees had made 4 errors and walked 9 or more opponents, the first time since 1996 that they've done it. First time against the Red Sox since 1941. So they, in a big game, once again, something they've done a scary amount of times against a team in the Red Sox that seemed to be their kryptonite, they just make dumb decisions. They don't really give you what I would consider to be a true test of a playoff team, like you had in San Diego and like you had in Houston. They are just a really poor matchup when it comes to playing the Boston Red Sox. And I can't really place it, but there's just something there in that matchup. So I didn't really glean as much from that matchup. I saw two teams that are supposed to be powerhouses in the American League, contenders for an ALCS and a berth in the World Series, and I went, this is the best the American League has to offer? These are two sloppy baseball teams with a lot of different issues going on.
It may not be the best that the American League has to offer, because I think Detroit would make an argument there. I think Seattle would like to try to make an argument. Houston might try to make an argument.
Yeah.
But I think it tells you the door is wide open.
It does.
That whole idea, the Parcellian idea, Bill Parcells, just get in the tournament and anything can happen, because these are not the greatest baseball teams that you're competing for spots for or competing against in the postseason. And I go back to what I've been saying all along is why I want this team so badly to make the postseason, because when you have a Crochet and a Chapman, if they're pitching the way Crochet and Chapman can pitch, you got a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, like, you have a first step towards winning a series. If you get a game where your ace goes 8 and your all-star closer just mows him down in the 9th, as you said he's been doing for months now, essentially.
Right.
Now you're up 1-0. Now you have momentum. Now it's like, oh wow, like we're kind of feeling ourselves a little bit here. And then you add in a clutch top of the order at the very least. I know we have questions about how deep this order is, and Bradfo brought it up with us yesterday. When they face good pitching, they kind of stink.
Yeah,
which is not a good quality to have heading into the postseason.
A lot of playoff teams have good pitchers, which is fair. Yeah, but your top two in the lineup, if at very least, is one of the best in baseball.
Unfortunately, the lineup goes nine deep.
It does.
Having two is better than having none. Did we want to note, so you only scored 6 runs yesterday.
Yeah.
And David Hamilton scored 2 of them.
He did. How about that? Look at that.
D-Ham.
Look at your broken clock being right. He
couple walks.
Tried his hardest to get himself picked off, which I think is when I texted you, your boy Hamilton's having a night. Look, I
mean when he dove, was nowhere near the base, and then had to do the old reach around with the mitt before. I don't know how he was safe on that.
I really don't.
And I don't
either.
Think the Yankees did either. They went to the phone, and they were like, oh, son of a bitch, he was safe. How was he yeah, safe on that?
Right.
He had the little league thing where he, you know, they teach you, like, step and a dive.
Yeah.
But when you dive, you have to hit the base. You can't still be a foot. It's like Willie Mays Hayes sliding into second base, and he's still a foot from the base.
Right, yeah. He dove. It's the swim move, which is really cool when you do it right. Mike Trout did that against our boy Brock Holt a bunch of years back. It's the swim move, but you're supposed to be moving when you do that.
Yeah.
It was he stopped dead on the dirt and then was like, oh, I got to get my other arm in here. And somehow, by the grace of God, he got it in there. My issue with your boy Hamilton is not necessarily a Hamilton issue. I think he's a good bench player on a team that has playoff aspirations. My problem is he just keeps getting put into situations where I would much rather see other players. And we talked about Vaughn Grissom yesterday. He's now hurt. I would have rather seen Grissom the last couple of times that Hamilton was called up. You could make an argument for Christian Campbell that maybe you'd like to see him in some of those spots. I see too many mistakes on defense and base running for a guy that's supposed to be your defensive specialist and your base runner, and that's what bothers me.
And he was hot in Worcester. I don't know if that necessarily true. I think he was batting like 370, 367 since being sent down.
This is Hamilton?
Yeah.
Hamilton. Oh, yeah. Well, he's a major league player. Well,
if we're being honest, he's probably a 4A player. He's probably the classic 4A player.
Yeah.
He's really good at AAA if you put him in Worcester or Polar Park, and he can... And then you bring him up to the big leagues. Well, he's not really.
He's a major league bench player.
Yes.
He's a major league pinch runner.
You're going to win a. I'm going to double down. I said early in the year you'd win baseball games because of David Hamilton.
Yes.
You have.
Yeah.
You're going to win a playoff game because of David Hamilton.
Oh, man.
So I said two things there, first of all.
Yeah.
I said they're going to make the playoffs because it's hard for you to win a playoff game because of David Hamilton if he's not in the playoffs.
I still think ultimately you're right on that, by the way.
Yeah, and I do. And I don't know how I would have felt had this game gone a different way. Let's just flip the script a little bit. Let's just flip the script and say the Red Sox made 4 errors. The Red Sox walked the Yankees, whatever it was, 9 times. 9 times, Bueller.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been Bueller.
Could have. May very well be.
And you gave up an Aaron Judge home run late in the game. How would I be feeling today? Not great.
No.
I would definitely be questioning the continuing to push the panic button that I pushed the other day.
You'd go, the warning signs were out against the Marlins and against the Orioles for that classic Alex Cora late August, September collapse. And then we'd watch that game, a massive game, you fall on your face, and you'd go, oh, we're here. We're in this again for the third, fourth year in a row.
Instead, what we're doing is questioning the Yankees.
Yes.
And looking at what the Yankees have been doing. For example, my buddy in the 207 who was poo-pooing the 14 home runs over 2 days down in Tampa at Steinbrenner Field said, glad to see those 14 wiffle ball home runs really helped the Yanks last night, Hart. They look to have the same issues driving in runners in scoring position, too. That's fair. Now, I think any team that hits 14 home runs is probably due to not hit, 5 in a game, every game keeping in perpetuity.
Right.
Especially if you return to a bigger ballpark, a major league ballpark. But the runners in scoring position thing has really something that I've started to fixate on, and it's part of my shower/driving fights in my head with different people like you.
Thank you, I think.
A lot of you people
'kay.
Tend to poo-poo RBI, right?
Would you like to define you people
analytics.
In this scenario?
People, modern baseball people, quants, those types of people.
It's considered an archaic stat.
All right,
stat.
So then don't bitch about runners in scoring
this
position.
This is not me.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, you can't criticize a team for not getting hits with runners in scoring position and say RBIs are useless. Because if you get hits with runners in scoring position, you drive in runs, right?
Yes.
Isn't it that simple? I don't want to, like, overstep my analytical boundaries here, but isn't it that simple?
It should be, yeah, but I think somebody would push back and go, well, if you just hit home runs every time you step to the plate, or if you home run or strike out, you would fix that problem. I think that's what somebody who was more analytically driven would argue with you.
Yeah, that's stupid too.
I know it is. I completely agree. It's throwing out the fundamental part of baseball, which is get on base, move runners over, and score them.
And also, it throws out who is the best player on the Red Sox right now in the lineup?
In the lineup, it's Roman Anthony.
Okay, and what is he best at?
Everything.
But what is his real strength? Getting on base, correct?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
So therefore, if your best player at the top of the lineup, who's going to get more at-bats than anybody, his strength is getting on base, shouldn't you be a team that's built on, I don't know, doing their job with runners in scoring position? Because if he gets on base, he's probably going to get to second base. And in the rules of baseball, that's scoring position.
Well, that's why the Red Sox were not successful at the beginning of the year versus successful in the back half of the season, because it seemed like they were finally embracing the fact that they're not sluggers. You got a bunch of guys that can move guys over, that can put the bat on the ball. And it seemed for a while like they were starting to do that. They've been bottom third quarter of the league in home runs since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Because they've embraced exactly what you're saying. And for some reason, this last, I don't know, week, they've gotten in their own heads about something that was making them so successful.
Right.
And I don't understand it. 3 for 19. 3 for 19. Do you know what 4 or 5 for 19 does? It
cruises to victory?
It negates the use of Chapman or Whitlock or anything like that. It's the same thing we've been talking about all season. The margins are razor thin. One run losses, 3 hits with runners in scoring position versus 4 or 5. They have been so freaking close all year, and now you have a bullpen that's taxed because
so
of it.
3 for 19 on top of an 0 for 13, so that's 3 for 32, using
yes.
the quick math in my head.
That's got to be, without looking at it, some kind of two-game record.
That is not good.
Like, you know how you said he had the record for home runs over 2 games or whatever? 3 for 30 in 2 games has to be a record.
And yet.
Big one.
6-3 win. Roman Anthony is the talk of the town. He's the talk of baseball. He's the talk of Yankee Stadium. 617-779-7937. If you want to join the conversation, we see you lining up. Questionable topic for one of the callers already based on last night's game that saw the bullpen do its job. No one scored.
Didn't they just not give up any runs?
The bullpen for the Yankees gave up 4 runs. That the bullpens are actually the reason you won the baseball game, the way that the Red Sox did perform and the way the Yankees did perform. 617-779-7937. We'll continue to break down this Red Sox win. We'll also talk about Dan Ball's favorite pitcher, Walker Buehler.
Oh?
And what his future might hold in terms of his role with the Boston Red Sox. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has double duty and has what's trending.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Walks being, you know, the key for you right now.
Yeah, it's embarrassing, man. I think the last time I walked this many in a season, I threw 207 innings. So, it just sucks.
Walker Buehler talking about all his walks this year. Effing sucks. He's embarrassed by it. He has been in that mode or mindset or world for nearly 2 months now. That's why Dan Ball, about 2 months ago, said he never wanted to see Walker Buehler pitch again.
I thought he was washed.
And he may still be washed.
Mm-hmm.
There are many that hold out hopes that if you get into the postseason, the bulldog Walker Buehler shows up and that there's this magical transformation and postseason Walker Buehler is a special guy.
Well, can I tell you, I'm absolutely one of those guys.
What?
I think he... No, but hear me out. I think he has the mindset and the experience that you want from every single player on your roster.
Yeah, but does he have the ability to pitch?
No. So there's your issue.
This is not a mind game. Yeah, if this were like some future thing where Walker Buehler's brain could be attached to a body that still does the job, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
But I need his arm to throw strikes that don't get crushed. Because so far, what we've seen from Walker Buehler is generally walk a guy, give up a bomb.
Right.
You know when the worst place to do that would be walk a guy and then give up a bomb?
First inning, first playoff game as a member of the Red Sox.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, game over. Thanks for playing. What are we going to do tomorrow? Which position player is going to pitch the ninth inning tonight? Like, it's over. So I'm dubious, but the Red Sox are clearly also dubious because for the first time, I feel like this is really the first time we've had any internal reports from the Red Sox.
From the Red Sox, yes. Walker Buehler has intimated that he might as well retire as opposed to pitch. And yeah, geez, how was I so off base to say I don't want this guy in my rotation? But yeah, reporting coming out of Mass Live and Chris Cotillo, Andy, that the Red Sox are considering making that move to the bullpen. He is not guaranteed to make his start on Monday in Baltimore. And the Cora quote, which is essentially like we haven't gotten to that yet, or we haven't made that decision yet,
yeah,
was much more much less definitive than we've heard in the past related to Walker Buehler.
Correct. And I also think that's a, first of all, respectful baseball guy.
Yep.
Dealing with a veteran player who has plenty of pelts on the wall, so to speak.
Respectful in what regard? Like, do you think this decision's already been made?
I do.
Okay.
But I think they're also making sure, like, if God forbid, knock on lots of wood.
Good call.
If Bayo, Crochet, or May get hurt, you're pitching Walker Buehler.
Sure, of course.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't have enough pitchers now barely for the rotation when healthy. Never mind if somebody were to. So don't make an announcement that you then backtrack from 2 days later, 3 days later, what? Because then it just gets weird.
Yeah.
For everybody involved. So push it off until the reality comes and he doesn't make a start and he goes to the bullpen. My issue here is, and we'll get to your phone calls momentarily, 617-779-7937. If there's one place where I think it's worse to have a reputation for walking batters and then giving up home runs than starting pitcher, it's the bullpen.
Yes.
What do I want him in the bullpen for? Like, so we've already seen all these guys that come in and give up home runs or walk people, Hicks and others.
Yeah.
Why do I need another one of those?
It's a fair point.
If you don't want him to be a starting pitcher, then tell him to leave the team like you did 2 months ago.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
So that would be a better option than putting him in the bullpen.
Do you think it's a good idea for him to go to the bullpen?
It's not
given his current, is he suddenly going to gain, is this going to be one of those bullpen things where if he knows he's only pitching like 14 pitches, he's throwing gas?
I could see that. Oh. I actually could see that. So he made
not the answer I was expecting from you.
No, I know, but he made it. But there's an interesting change that's happened recently. He made the change, and we talked about this when it happened. He changed to only pitching out of the stretch,
yes,
as opposed to pitching from the windup. And whatever the change, the simplification of the movement seemed, it hasn't fixed all his problems, nope, but it's at least helped them a little bit. And as you know, guys who pitch from the stretch are often relievers. So
I think he was telling them, hey, this is what it would look like if I just pitch from the stretch.
I don't know if it's the chicken or the egg, or he was showing them that, or they saw that and went, wow, I could see that for 2 to 3 innings in mop-up duty. But I wouldn't hate having him as a back end of the bullpen option in a playoff series, because that is what, that's the reason he got the contract he did from the Red Sox, because he came out of the bullpen for the Dodgers in the World Series against the Yankees and was very good. So I'm intrigued by it, and it's to your point about Hicks and guys that in Alcala, guys that they've rolled out. You need to figure out who your bottom two or three bullpen arms are. I would give Walker Buehler a chance to earn one of those spots.
And there's also the idea, if you do believe he's a postseason guy, and there's some magical adjustment or increase in his performance, atmosphere, whatever, we do know that in the postseason, guys like Alex Cora could pull any pitcher at any time. Dustin May could give you one inning and all of a sudden Walker Buehler's on the mound.
Right.
And now you're saying, see what you can give me, Walker. If you can give me 4 or 5, we got a good chance to win this game.
Right. Scatter a couple of runs, but keep me in this game.
Right. So I guess if you really sort of envision the perfect role and scenario and deployment and all. Now, do I think it will work? Probably not.
Right. Right.
Because I think I'm more on your side of the equation. I think he's just done.
Yeah.
I just don't think there are many bullets left in the gun. The other side of it is, I don't know what his mindset will be in that role. His mindset hasn't been great, I don't think, as a starting pitcher.
Right.
Because he feels like he's embarrassing himself. I think he feels like he doesn't deserve the job he's had.
He's certainly, anytime you say the word retire in the middle of a season,
yeah,
especially your first season with another team, yeah, that kind of shows me, because there's the classic saying, if you're already thinking about retiring, you might as well retire.
So
you got one foot out the door.
In a way, I think he kind of would have agreed with you about 2 months ago that he's maybe toast. That's when he first started talking about, I'm not just pitching for my spot in the rotation, I'm pitching for my spot in the big leagues.
And that
whatever.
Was my biggest concern. Like, the mechanics and the crappy pitching is one thing, but the mindset of I'm not even sure I should be here is quite another to me.
So I do wonder how he would maybe embrace the role. Now, he might look at it the way we're sort of optimistically looking at it. This is a team that right now is in the playoffs that is going to go on a playoff run. Not only am I going to be a long reliever, middle reliever, whatever, right now, but I could be doing it in October. And if I'm doing it in October, there's no shame in that. In fact, I could buff up my resume as the Bulldog. I could one performance. He's one October performance away from we forget all of this. Like, literally, you forget all of this and you just go back to, doesn't matter whether it's the Dodgers or the Red Sox, this guy's got ice in his veins with the season on the line kind of narrative or story.
And you also have to have the foresight, A, you're not catching on with a better team than the Red Sox right now in a starting role, I wouldn't think.
Right.
I don't think there's another team that would have you as one of their top four starters. And I'm not sure that your future in Major League Baseball, if you consider yourself an MLB pitcher after this season, is as a starting pitcher. I think it's kind of your sixth guy, starts half the games, comes out of the bullpen half the games. I kind of think that's where he's headed, so why not start it and give your team a chance to win?
617-779-7937. Do you have any confidence in Walker Buehler, whether that be as a starting pitcher or a bullpen arm? What do you think the Red Sox should do with him? We'll take your calls. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to David in Florida, who has a thought on the Sox bullpen. What's up, David? David? One? Two? Do they not listen? I don't get. They wait forever. They wait so long.
Well, his subject line was Sox bullpen horrible, and I guess you mix in a horrible call.
Well, I mean, I don't disagree big picture questions about the bullpen, not named Chapman and Whitlock, the thing we've done all along when we kind of exclude them from the criticism.
Horrible's a bit strong, though, isn't it?
And certainly coming off last night.
Yeah.
Last night, they pitched, what was it, 5 scoreless innings?
Yeah, you inherit a mess from Giolito, and, you know, Wilson had his issues. He walked 2 of his own, but he got out of it, and then you slam the door from there. And they're also, and I can double-check the number and give you an exact in a moment, but they're a top 5 bullpen season-wide in terms of ERA. So you got to ignore, well, I mean, you got to take the good with the bad, obviously, but there's been way more good than bad. And you also have to look at it within context. There have been a lot more good in performances in the Red Sox bullpen than your average bullpen in Major League Baseball.
Correct. And they've tried to distance themselves from some of the bad. Like, they're still trying to figure out the bullpen on the fly.
Yes.
Like Alcala, guys like that have come, they're gone. Hicks, who knows what his role will be moving forward, even though they are sort of invested in him financially and trade-wise.
Unfortunately. But Slayton's on his way back. He looked very good in his first rehab. Weissert, yep. I would wonder if he could use a quick 10-day breather to catch his breath.
Oh, he absolutely could.
Because they did that last year.
But I don't know if they can afford him doing that.
Well, what do you think about a quick little one-for-one? Slayton comes back, Weissert sits for 15 days or whatever. Either you can option him or put him on the IL.
If you get me Slayton and I swap those out, and that's like I'm confident. Because I think Weissert has been a sneaky key contributor for this team.
Oh, he's been outstanding.
Like, when you go beyond the Chapman-Whitlock part of the bullpen, Weissert's been huge. I also like his vibes and energy. Like, he's got a little whack job to him.
Absolutely.
He's got some of that I think is good. I think that's always good in all areas of a team that fancies itself a playoff team, that fancies itself going somewhere.
What?
Like, characters, energy, vibe. Okay. And you can't just, as Cora likes to say, excitement or energy comes from the offense. No, I don't think that's always true. I think Dustin May can bring some energy when the redheaded soldier's out there freaking out and doing things.
I meant to ask you about that.
Yeah?
Do you like the celebrations after the second inning?
Why not?
I was just curious.
You're in Major League Baseball.
Okay.
Like, if you accomplish something, enjoy it. Especially if that's who you are. I don't want fake. The one thing I never want is fake.
Right.
But he had the comments, basically, I've sucked a lot and, you know, didn't have the opportunity to celebrate or succeed, so when I succeed, I'm going to celebrate. I'm paraphrasing, but that was sort of his mentality.
Yeah.
I've been through a lot of crap in recent years, so when I get the chance to enjoy it, and that's a very football-type idea. We've heard it this year with Mike Vrabel and Drake May. Go celebrate with your teammates. Celebrate. Show emotions. It's a tough sport.
Right.
Bill Belichick used to do that. There were times on defense he didn't think his defense had enough of him. If you make a play, you make a big hit, you make a sack, you get a celebrate. You worked for weeks and days and months for that to come up and that to work out your way,
right?
Enjoy it. The game; these games are played on emotion. So yeah, I have no qualms with a guy if it's okay. If it's natural.
Yes, yeah.
If you start to force it, and I feel like it's fake, and you're trying to inject something into the team because you think it's needed, but it's not really what you do, then yeah. I think it's...
It comes off as genuine, I would
with
say.
With him, it's definitely genuine.
It just took a little... I'm going to be honest, it took a little getting used to.
Yeah.
I saw that after he, you know, battled through a second inning. I'm like, really? But then he kept doing... But then he would do it in the same kind of situation, but after a good inning. And
yeah.
So you just kind of realize, oh, this is just the kind of energy that he pitches with. And apparently off the field, he is a church mouse. Like, you never hear from him.
Right.
But then he gets out there and all the energy is channeled towards that. And I kind of like that.
Love it even more.
Yeah.
Again, that's a football thing. Like, between the white lines, I'm a whack job. Matt
right.
Collins was saying it last week on some podcast. Like, I'm crazy. I don't care about you. If you're on the other team and we're between the lines, I don't care about you. You are the enemy. I'm going to take you out. If you get hurt, I'm sorry you get hurt. When I go off the field, I'll feel bad that you got hurt. But when
right.
I'm on the field... Collateral damage. I got to go through you to get what I need and want as a football player.
He also doesn't keep his idiosyncrasies in between the lines either. So your point is well taken.
It's true.
But he's an interesting cat no matter where he is.
617-779-7937. Let's squeeze in one more phone call. Hopefully this caller is actually there, unlike David in Florida. Let's go to Avery in the car. What's up, Avery?
Hey, I just want to talk about Walker Buehler. I think he's gotten way too many opportunities. He's blown all of them. I think he should be DFA'd and off the team, not just the bullpen, unless it's like the Isaiah Campbell mop-up role. But I don't think there's a magic switch that will turn on in the postseason. Maybe he had one good postseason last year, but I don't think it works like that. He's shown he's a bad pitcher. I don't think it will magically get better.
All right, thanks for the call, Avery. I don't hate the idea of them giving him the shot if he's comfortable with the role, because I don't think they're loaded with bullpen arms.
Right.
I don't, like, there's not all these guys that I'm like, well, whose job is he taking? Who's he bumping out of the bullpen? No, I don't think they have enough bullpen arms, so I'll give him a shot out there. Again, if he's willing to embrace that role. I remember a couple years ago when Nick Pivetta went out there.
Yeah,
and
he's awesome.
But he bitched about it.
Oh, yeah.
Bitched about it. I'm guessing Walker Buehler won't.
Right.
I don't know for sure. But if he wants to embrace it, he absolutely... I'm sorry, I'm slightly distracted. Ted Johnson, well, I think he ripped his sleeves off on the way into the studio.
Oh, no, check your phone.
My man came in looking like he walked out of an action movie. He is ready to go.
He flexed and his sleeves ripped off. Good Lord. Ted Johnson here early for his 3 o'clock start. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we're going to transition a little bit with some interesting talk. We got Patriots chatter coming. They played the preseason finale last night in New York. It wasn't great. It was honestly kind of a debacle, but it also put some stress on the viewers, us sports fans of Boston. We had to do the dual screen thing if you wanted to watch the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Giants and the Patriots. I learned something about myself last night. We'll talk about it next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
WEEI Afternoons, if you're watching on Twitch, you get a sneak preview of what you're going to see from Ted Johnson. Apparently,
oh my God.
Sun's out, guns out, Harley's out for the ride in today here on WEEI Afternoons.
That would scare the daylights out of me in our parking lot.
That's a Terminator.
Oh, yeah, he looks nice.
Yeah, well, I mean,
he
doesn't look smiling now.
I mean, it is a little imposing when I see those sleeves, like... ready to whoop somebody's ass.
Yeah.
Roadhouse style.
He's ready to keep
something.
Us in line today.
Yep.
Or keep you in line. Me, I'm not really worried about.
Yeah. What would I ever do to get out of line?
I don't know, but you usually get it out of your system before 3, funny enough.
So last night, we had a huge baseball game down in New York.
Yes.
And a relatively meaningful football game.
Let's call it a fascinating football game.
Fascinating football game. Patriots, Giants, Red Sox, Yankees, which led a bunch of us here on the show to do the double screen thing.
It's my favorite.
Dan Ball, you seem like you're a veteran of it.
That is my, so the photo that I sent to you guys is my normal living room setup. I have a main screen in the middle and then a side screen that is used for two. Those are the only two screens in the household. But
I don't
want to
hear about that. The tax bracket's different on the other side of the glass.
You had two screens all along.
I inherited the small one. Let's be real.
I had to set mine up last night because I did want to watch both.
Yeah.
So I scramble home. I got the Roku. I got this other screen. Blah, set it up. And then I realized about 10 minutes into the experience, I was overwhelmed.
Okay.
I couldn't really do it. So I have, my normal basement TV is mounted on the corner on the wall.
Yeah.
And it's like a, I don't know, 55-inch, something like that. Regular TV. And so I have now like a 42-inch that I found a little table and I put it right below that. And so I had the Patriots on the bottom, the Red Sox on the top. Well, first I had to figure out where they were. I forgot it was on Fox, and I go to Nesson, and I'm like, why are the Woo Sox on? I'm watching Woo Sox baseball. Then I go to look for the Patriots, and I'm like, where's the Patriots game? That was on Amazon Prime, so yep. I had to log into that,
Tough one.
But once I finally get it on, do people do this regularly, and are you good at it? Do you find a way to actually follow both games, or is it one of those where you actually miss everything because you're trying to follow both games?
The last part is yes. You absolutely – you either – watch about half of two games or you favor one game and you miss a good part of whatever's on your quote unquote second screen.
Right.
So a lot of times, like in the case of this past night, I was locked into the Red Sox, as you would expect, just knowing me. And then I got enough of the Patriots Giants game the first go around, and then I rewatched the extended highlights this morning just to make sure I didn't miss anything. And last night was more about reading roster cuts and who was playing, mm-hmm. anyways. So that one I was also following along on Twitter. This is becoming a huge thing, though. A lot of people are going with the multi-screen man cave, gambler's cave, however you want to characterize it. This is very much becoming a big thing of let's see how many screens our ADHD brains can handle.
Well, I think there's a few reasons for that. It's sports going in all different directions, and sometimes it can be difficult to bounce around when you're on an app or a streaming service. So if you put Amazon Prime Patriots on, I can bounce around on the secondary TV with whatever I'm using, YouTube TV, Xfinity, whatever. I also think if you go to our friends at BJ's and look at their TV selection and what they cost, the prices have come down so far that you can get a 45-inch, 50-inch HD flat screen for like a couple $100. So you're like, why am I going to watch it on my phone as my second screen? Or why am I going to watch my iPad as my second screen? I'm going to get a second TV. Also with Roku makes it easy. You can buy a Roku for like $20 or something.
Oh, yeah. Same with the Amazon Fire Stick.
Right. So
most of those TVs that you're talking about are also smart TVs. Yeah.
Right.
So you can have the Xfinity app right on there or YouTube TV or in my case, Fubo, whatever you want to use.
So they've made it easy for you to theoretically watch two games. My issue is, practically, I could not. Didn't know what to do with the damn audio. I had both on at first, and I'm like, this is just voices in my head. Gotta go. Chaos.
Yeah.
Then I muted one. Then I tried to put them both on high, and I would bounce back and forth with the different remotes on the mute.
That might
buttons.
Have been the craziest thing you tried.
So what do you do? Do you listen to everything? Nothing? Pick one? Pick a lane?
You pick one.
Like what?
You do that as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. You pick one.
So, okay, so what's the... I also... Dan Ball has a side-by-side screen setup.
Yeah. Dan has two TVs, which is probably a little better. I went with... You know, I have YouTube TV, so I just did the split screen.
Yeah.
And then you pick which one you want the volume, and you can go back and forth. So if there's a commercial in the Sox game, I'll put the volume on the Pats game and vice versa.
Okay. I think I need to move my second screen to side-by-side.
I think the top
and bottom is hard to do. I also think I need to... Last night, the primary focus was the Patriots for me.
Yes. Because
I felt like baseball, I could do what I do with baseball and have it on as a background sport. And yet I had the baseball on the big TV up top and then the football on the little TV. It was just too much going on.
Andy Hart, though. Trouble concentrating on things. Who would have thought?
Your setup was... your TVs were... There was almost no gap between screen to screen.
That might have also been the issue.
Yeah. It kind of, from the angle that you took the photo and sent to us of, it kind of looked like you were watching one game vertically.
Yeah.
Which would have completely thrown me off.
Oh, it threw me off quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then I had a couple Miller Lights, and I got more and more thrown off the more Miller Lights I had.
And you're like, just look at the screen in the middle at this point.
I feel like this is now a necessity. Like, with the Red Sox hopefully making a run, football season, we're going to have playoff games, we're going to have Monday, Sunday night football. Like, there's going to be crossover where you need to watch multiple sports. Or, if I just want to do the traditional Patriots game on one screen, Red Zone channel on the other screen.
See, but that's easier because there's a signet, like, obviously you're focusing on the Patriots, you'll have that volume on, and then Red Zone is kind of just, whenever there's a break in the action, I can look.
Right.
You just have to, identify what is the more significant event that I'm watching and therefore that I'm listening to.
And I need to focus. Are there any supplements that will help my focus?
Oh, I got a guy.
617-779-7937. Did you have the double screens last night? You got any tricks for me to show me how to watch two screens at once so I don't feel like I just missed both games instead of watching both games? We're coming up on 3 o'clock, though. You saw it on Twitch. Ted Johnson's here. Sun's out, guns out. He is ready to flex his muscle in a three-point stance. That's next on WEEI Afternoons.
Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.